This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Clean drinking water straight from the tap is something most expect from their local water utility, but a new report has uncovered widespread violations in the number of contaminants flowing through that faucet. In the second half of the show today, we'll talk with one of the authors of that report about what contaminants they're finding and what's happening with America's water infrastructure that's leading to that contamination. But first, hundreds of arrests, more than 100 crashes, dozens of injuries. Those are the numbers from just 18 months of what's become rampant juvenile auto thefts in Pinellas County. Reporters at the Tampa Bay Times built a database to track the thefts, arrests, and personalities that have hit this Gulf Coast county so hard. It's a trend that's emboldened would-be thieves who boast of their latest carjacking with videos on social media. And it's frustrating police who know most kids they arrest will spend just hours or days in detention before being let loose. Joining us to talk about their two-part series called Hot Wheels and The Chase are Tampa Bay Times reporters Elisa Gartner and Zachary Sampson. Welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thanks for having us.
We are talking to the reporters behind the investigation of kids stealing cars in Pinellas County and the violent crashes and confrontations with law enforcement that go along with these crimes. Ask your questions to the reporters or share your own experiences when it comes to car thefts in Southwest Florida at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So in your database, you have information from more than 740 arrests from more than 500 auto thefts over 18 months from 2015 through mid-2016. What does your data say about these car thieves?
Well, what it shows us is primarily these car thieves are kids. And so they're as young as 10 years old. They're often very small, sometimes not even tall enough to ride the roller coasters here at Busch Gardens in Tampa. And in almost all cases, what it's showing us is they're getting the keys before they steal the car, often from an unlocked car.
Okay, so they're happening upon unlocked cars, seeing the keys, seeing an opportunity, and just taking off driving.
And that's absolutely what they're doing.
And how are they doing at the driving? A 10-year-old usually doesn't know how to drive.
Pretty frightening to think about, isn't it? Some of these kids over the years, as they steal cars, we've heard from the cops and from the reports, get better at it. But we talked to a 17-year-old girl who started when she was 11 and had to stack two couch cushions on the driver's seat just to see over the steering wheel. Some of the kids don't know how to turn on the lights on the car. If you've got a stick shift, you're probably safe because they do not know how to drive stick. But this is not stopping them from driving these cars, these Toyotas and Nissans, at over 100 miles per hour on residential streets, on the highways, driving the wrong way on bridges. It's a very dangerous epidemic.
Well, so tell me a little bit about how these car thefts end. They tend to end with crashes, often violent crashes. It seems like in your database you had 137 crashes because of juvenile auto theft.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of them do end in crashes, and those are actually just the cases, those 137 where there's a witness to the crash or it's actually seen. Even more of the cars end up, maybe behind a vacant lot with property damage, which might suggest a crash. But in most cases, police will spot the car. It'll be on their hot sheet, signifying that it's stolen. And if they try to light it up and pull the car over, the kids will take off and flee at a high speed. And if the car does crash, if the police are able to put down what's called spike strips, which typically will deflate all of the tires, the kids typically run. And if they are getting away, they often end in confrontations at gunpoint. They often end with police dogs, sometimes biting these kids. We had a case where a 14-year-old boy was arrested at gunpoint, and he was trying to wrestle away the police dog's head, and the officer was standing right there, and the kid shouted, "I'm only 14." Mm-hmm. It escalates very quickly. Car theft is considered a property crime, but there is often a violent end to that theft.
Well, our analysis showed that a kid in Pinellas crashes a stolen car every 4 days. We're seeing them blow stop signs, red lights, hitting minivans driven by mothers and daughters, ramming police cruisers that go up in flames, nearly mowing down kids stepping off a school bus.
Do they just feel that there's no danger involved in that? Do they think they're in a video game?
Well, I think that they recognize that there is some danger involved, and that's probably part of the thrill. But there's a difference between there being some danger involved and some consequence. And for a kid, that danger isn't necessarily, from what they told us, seen as a consequence. Because what ends up happening is if they're not badly hurt, or if they are badly hurt, they're maybe have the handcuffs slapped on them and they're taken to a detention center, but they're only there for hours or a few days. There's a state limit on how long you can be held before trial of 21 days for a kid. So what ends up happening is they're released back home to mom or dad or their aunt or whomever their guardian is, and they do it again, and then they maybe get arrested again for the same crime, but they're released again, and so they do it again. So sure, there's some danger, there's some personal risk involved, but there's not a situation, excuse me, where they're going to get locked up or really held for any length of time.
But are there any of them that are being accused as adults or tried as adults in these situations?
Yeah, so that's an issue with the system that's come up a lot. As Zach was saying, it's slap on the wrist, slap on the wrist, slap on the wrist, and then the sledgehammer. After so many times of being caught and released and tried as a juvenile, these kids are being increasingly direct filed into the adult system where they are suddenly facing prison time. We talked to a 16-year-old who had that experience. You know, he thought another Grand Theft Auto arrest wouldn't be a big deal because he had gone through it so many times, and then suddenly he caught, you know, four and a half years at 16 and is serving time in prison.
And he was surprised by that.
Yes. I mean, from all of his experiences, it seemed like car theft was an okay thing to do.
And then you report that twice as many cars are found, damaged, and abandoned, but no arrest was made. Do they just crash them and leave them if there's not a police officer around?
Well, in a lot of those cases where the car's found damaged, there is actually an arrest made, but it's made a little bit later. But absolutely, they do ditch it. And that is something that a lot of the kids told us that they'll do. And typically where they ditch a car, if it's undrivable, it could be anywhere, they'll just leave it at that spot. But if they're able to get it somewhere, they'll put it behind a house, in an alley, somewhere where it maybe isn't going to be spotted right away. They'll wipe it down so that their hopefully fingerprints won't attach them to the car and lead to a later arrest. One boy told us that a tactic they use is to leave the car running, ditch it, and jack up the AC because the condensation it creates will muddle the fingerprints and make it so you're not caught.
Well, they have all the little tricks there, huh?
They absolutely do.
So when they're pushing 100 miles an hour in these police chases, what do people say about this threat to other people, other drivers, pedestrians?
Well, police agencies in Pinellas do not technically chase stolen vehicles unless the driver or people inside are suspected of a more violent felony. So it's not the high-speed chases that you're thinking of. They do that in Tampa and some other jurisdictions, but we do not do that in Pinellas because it is seen as too much of a risk to innocent drivers and pedestrians. That said, just seeing a police cruiser, as Zach mentioned earlier, can cause a teen to drive as if they're being chased. You know, take off at high speeds, go through stop signs, make turns when they're not supposed to. We see in our reports kids driving up on the sidewalk to pass other cars and get away, and going high speeds around gridlock traffic, creating really dangerous situations.
Mm-hmm. You describe a 2016 incident where a stolen Honda Accord was driven into a cemetery pond. What happened there?
So that's certainly for us here in Pinellas, and it did become a national story, something that's well known. And what ended up happening there were there was three young girls, 15 and 16 years old, who were in this stolen car driving around on a joyride, from what they posted on Facebook that night. And the police tried to pull them over. They didn't stop, and they continued away at a high speed, and they turned into the cemetery. In that location here, you can see the highway lights in the distance. We sort of can never know, but they likely thought they were going to make it to the interstate. And instead, they crashed into a pond in the cemetery. It was clotted with weeds, and the stolen car sank to the bottom, and the three girls died inside of it.
They couldn't get out. Had these girls had prior arrests for these kinds of thefts?
Yes, the girl who police believe is the driver, Dominique Battle, it would have been her, had she survived, would have been her fifth grand theft auto arrest in about a year's time. Ashanti Butler would have been her third or fourth, and the third girl, Lanaya Miller, had also had a previous grand theft auto arrest.
So now we talked a little bit about repeat penalties, and one kid ended up getting put into the adult system. How do they decide at what point they're going to become charged as an adult?
So that varies a little bit. It's obviously up to prosecutorial discretion, but there are a couple of simple barometers. Depending on how if the person is a repeat offender, if this is their third, fourth, fifth offense, then they're a little more likely to be direct filed into the adult system. If it's a particularly dangerous crime, if it escalates from, a grand theft auto to a carjacking where there's a person involved who may get pushed or run over or hit, that certainly will escalate it. But aside from that, 16, the age of 16 is really sort of a turning point in a lot of these cases. It would be pretty much unheard of for them to direct file a 13-year-old, even if it was their fifth or sixth auto theft arrest. But a 16-year-old, you're seen a little bit differently, and you might get kicked up.
And then their penalties. Say you are 13, you've stolen five cars, this is your fifth arrest. What generally happens to kids like that are still in the considered juveniles?
You can be sentenced to a residential program, which is essentially like the juvenile version of jail. You'll generally spend about 3 months to a year. You can get out early on a good behavior. We had a 13-year-old recently who was on a spree of stealing cars, believed to have an AK-47 that he stole out of an unlocked trunk of a car, who was sentenced to a program. They go to school, they meet other kids. We do see a lot of kids reoffend when they get out of programs, but it's sort of the thing that can happen to them when they're younger than 16 and they keep offending.
So why is this happening in Pinellas County?
Yeah, great question, and I think that's one that we asked, dozens of times to various different local leaders, state leaders, and they were totally miffed by it. They had difficulty pinning it down to an origin point. But what is sort of abundantly clear to us is that it's taken off in Pinellas. It's become almost like a fad. It's become the thing to do. And that sort of virality to it can be intensely local. Once it becomes the cool thing to do amongst kids in a certain place, it just sort of grows from there.
Are law enforcement officers seeing anything like this in other parts of the state or in the country that you know of?
Not really elsewhere in Florida. I mean, there's far more arrests for this in Pinellas than anywhere else in Florida, and even other major counties across the entire country, including Los Angeles. From our research, the only other place that we've seen nationally where this is sort of getting both this kind of law enforcement and media scrutiny is Milwaukee. They seem to be having a little bit of an issue with juvenile car theft, but it is certainly something that has popped up and stumped some of the police officials here locally.
Some of the factors that we looked at that could contribute are that Pinellas is the most densely populated county in Florida. So it's very easy to walk from an impoverished area to a more affluent area. These kids go to nicer areas to go car hopping, to look for nicer cars, to steal. We also have a fairly abysmal public transportation system. I think that's a pretty open secret, which makes finding a way to get around more attractive.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about an investigation into a surge in kids stealing cars in Pinellas County and the often violent crashes that bring them to an end. Give us a call with your thoughts at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. One car thief that you wrote about is a notorious 13-year-old named Tyron T-Man McKinnon. He's a troubled kid living with guardians. Tell me a little bit about this guy.
Yeah, absolutely. So Tyron is a very young kid, and he is one whom, in the course of our reporting, police labeled as sort of the most dangerous boy in the streets. Tyron is familiar, even before we started reporting on this, to many people who follow the news closely around here and certainly to law enforcement, because he, in December of 2015, was spotted on surveillance tape at a local gas station, sort of conning an 89-year-old man out of his car. He he was circling on a bike, and he as the man pulled away from the gas pumps and said, "Hey, your tire's low." And the man got out and he went around the car to look, and the tire wasn't low. But by the time he got there, Tyron was hopping in and peeling off from the gas station. So that case made local news, and so did Tyron's mugshot, even though he was only 12 at the time.
Yeah, I'm wondering how that became released with his name at that age.
Yeah, well, I think that's a little bit emblematic of the issue here. Police, obviously frustrated by this continual crime, decided to send that right out. They released it to the media sort of their own volition. And that sort of started to take off. And what was interesting about it is, you know, the Times at the time actually didn't even name Tyron. We didn't, you know, I remember writing that brief. It was three paragraphs that we wrote on it. But it was something that stuck in the minds of a lot of people. Seeing it was so vivid. And so later, as we started reporting on this, it turned out that Tyron was sort of back at it. When we were riding along with police, when we were talking to kids, when we were looking on the kids' Facebook pages, when we were starting to get our arms and our minds around this problem, that name kept coming up. T-Man, it was because he was believed to have been stealing a lot of cars at that time, and in some cases getting guns out of them, and he was in the wind. The police couldn't find him, and you know, they eventually caught up to him, but he was out for a little bit of time, and he was causing a lot of issues.
Where's he now?
He was sentenced to a low security residential program, so he'll be there for the next, you know, however many months.
And he's still 13.
Yes. But, you know, it's interesting. He started stealing cars, or at least getting arrested for Grand Theft Auto, when he was 10 years old. The first time police arrested him, they didn't even think it could be him, even as he was walking to the car with the key fob, just because he was so small. You know, even now he's maybe 4'11", 5 feet, and this was a couple years ago. He was jerking the steering wheel back and forth, could barely be seen over it. But in just a few years' time, at 13, he's basically a veteran of car theft, which is a pretty good symbol for the problem and the real danger of this situation in Pinellas.
But I think that with kids, sometimes that type of notoriety could become a source of pride. And then you have social media playing a role in this surge. Explain a little bit how social media plays into this.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's sort of an unfortunate thing that leads to further spread, right, when notoriety becomes a source of pride for these kids. But social media factors in a couple of different ways. First and foremost, and predictably, it becomes a platform for them to show off. They'll post pictures of themselves in stolen cars or videos, and pictures of themselves dangling key fobs or standing on the hood of, you know, a car that they just stole. And that racks up likes, obviously. That racks up sort of credit. And another way that social media works is that it serves as a place to trade tips, and that can be simple or it can be kind of complicated, right? And so there will be frequent posts on there of, "I'm on wheels, who can I pick up?" or "Who up?" or "Who wants to go car hopping?" Not necessarily in those exact words. Mm-hmm. And it can also be a place where they start posting things like "narcs out" or "troll out," which is terms for police. And so, you know, when the helicopter is up, they'll post that as well. And so it becomes a place for kids to gather, not only to brag about their accomplishments, but to try to help each other in not getting caught.
I don't mean to sound completely out of touch, but what does car hopping mean for these guys?
Car hopping is a term they use when they go. They'll either walk or drive an already stolen car. Two kids once took an Uber, actually, to a neighborhood to go. They will walk down the street testing door handles, just seeing what unlocked cars there are. And then once they get inside the car, they look for a key. If they can find a key, they take it. If they can't find a key, they might find money or electronics or something they can sell. But they call this process of testing door handles and looking for cars to steal car hopping.
So they're not walking around with Slim Jims or anything. They're just taking the ones that have unlocked doors.
Yeah, there's surprisingly little technique to it. It's completely a crime of opportunity. And that's sort of what's maddening, is if people would lock their cars, you would see this most likely go away. They're not smashing windows. They're not jimmying locks.
And they're not hotwiring either.
No, there's no high-tech gadgetry. You know, 10, 15 years ago, it was a trend here where they were using screwdrivers to break the steering column and take cars. Now it's just, you know, where's there a key? What can I take?
a complete opportunity crime. We have a call coming in from Dale in Cape Coral. Dale has a question. What would you like to ask?
Yes, I have a question. In most cases, are not automobiles considered deadly weapons? And even if these children are not involved with high-speed chases, in which case I think they should be charged with some sort of weapon charge. But even those that are driving around untrained should have some sort of penalty placed on them for toying with a deadly weapon. That's my... Also, I think, why can't there be a curfew out on these kids?
Okay, well, that's kind of two separate questions, but one of which being, why can't they be charged with... assault with a deadly weapon, because a car can be one if you run into someone.
Well, certainly the case, but you're only going to get that assault charge if someone is proven to have been injured, and typically that charge will get levied as a leaving the scene of a crash involving injury. If a kid flees, assault requires intent. It's an interesting point. You know, some of the judges we talked about did recognize the aspect of a car is a little bit of an escalator, but if you read the letter of the law, particularly in the juvenile system, a car is not going to lead to some sort of escalated charge involving a deadly weapon, because grand theft is grand theft. It's a property crime. It's a third-degree felony. So grand theft auto, in a vacuum on its face, is not, in the eyes of the law, different from stealing $300-plus dollars worth of something from Publix. You know, we could go load up on Publix subs, but what the judges told us is that obviously is not something you can kill someone with. To the second point, as to the idea of a curfew, that, you know, that's certainly something that's interesting, and I think that's something that some of our local leaders, including a city council here in St. Petersburg, said that they'd like to see it explored.
Mm-hmm. And he brought up weapon, making the car the weapon, but in your reporting you see that there are a lot of actual weapons, guns, in some of these cars. Can you tell me a little about that?
Yeah, it is shocking how many people will leave guns, loaded guns, magazines, ammunition in unlocked cars. We saw at least 55 occasions in our reports of gunplay where people in, or kids in stolen cars were spotted shooting off guns, or the cars were recovered dotted with bullet holes. Jacquez Jackson, a 17-year-old who died after he was shot at, was riding in a stolen car, shot at from kids driving a stolen car, and as he bled out in an alley, he later died at the hospital. His friend was wiping down the stolo. That's what they call the stolen cars. They have their own language. Wiping down the car with his T-shirt to try to get rid of the fingerprints. So while grand theft auto is you know, sort of a simple, straightforward crime, it gets colluded, you know, with these accidents and with these guns and, you know, these cars, your stolen car, you leave your Toyota unlocked. The next thing you know, you could see it in the news as the principal accessory in a drive-by shooting.
Wow. I'm surprised that people leave guns in cars that are loaded. And there was an AK-47 in one?
Yeah. In that case, I believe the guy's house had a fire and he had moved the gun into his car, which you can kind of understand, but then you wonder why didn't you lock it?
Yeah. So you say that you use computer software to map the social connections between these kids. Did you find that this was a certain clique or group of kids that kind of hung together that would do this?
This is not one clique or one small group of kids, say, from the same neighborhood or same school. It traverses the county, but it is what would be called a connected network. It's an intensely social crime, and what that means and what's the probably easiest way to understand it is to sort of envision 6 degrees from Kevin Bacon, and all of these kids are within a few skips of each other, you know.
Six degrees from T-Man.
Everybody is, you know, she knows him who knows him, and it spreads sort of socially like that. And that certainly is a place where social media comes into play as well. A kid, you know, is friends with X person who's friends with Y person, and they're all car thieves. So it becomes a network, but it's not one clique, one school, one neighborhood. It spreads all across our county.
And then that notoriety again comes into play when you have the social media and you reach beyond your own little neighborhood and your own little area and school. and then you become feeling more powerful. And so you spoke to some of these professional convicted car thieves. What kind of criteria did they say they used to go out and scout neighborhoods to find cars?
Oh, lots of things. One kid that Zach talked to said that he avoids, quote-unquote, front streets. He looks for quiet streets where he won't be seen. Many of them say that they look for more affluent neighborhoods than their own. Some don't want to steal from their own community. Others are just, you know, it's pretty straightforward. They want nicer cars, cleaner cars. One cop said that a group of kids he hauled in were using Google Earth to look for affluent communities off US 19 that they could just pull off into. And we certainly see in reports a bit of scouting. They'll hop gates for gated neighborhoods and target cars in there. Some kids target the condo buildings on Beach Drive, which is actually pretty clever. You know, people park in those garages and think their cars are secure because there's a gate or security, so they won't lock it. But it's pretty easy to walk in.
And certainly we've had kids who will exit the county and go into other places, into Hillsborough, into Pasco, into Manatee, and they'll go steal cars there too. And part of that is obviously cars exist there. They're probably unlocked. There probably are keys inside. But part of car theft is you're in a stolen car and it gives you a means to get places you wouldn't go otherwise. So that kind of travel becomes an incentive for them as well.
So, and then when they go into different counties, they have different regulations they're dealing with because, as you mentioned before, Pinellas County won't give chase. They won't run after them unless they suspect that there is some sort of violent crime that's happened. They go into other counties and they may be facing an actual police chase. What other methods are law enforcement using to try to stop these kids? And what are some of the different ways that they had to get inventive since they can't chase them down?
Well, they try to reach them at other access points. To the first part of your question, there's something called home, where they monitor the most chronic offenders who have five or more felonies in the last year or have been sentenced to court-ordered probation. They try to make sure that they're home at night when many car thefts are committed, when they're supposed to be home. So that's a special group of like 11 officers from a few different jurisdictions. There's also the Violent Crimes Task Force that can quickly have a dozen officers on the scene of a suspected car theft. As far as what they do on the road, they also have their tactics, just as the kids do, to get away, to try to stop them. They'll surveil them. They'll set up a perimeter. So they'll be, you know, a block behind a car, and then the police car will be, you know, another one will be waiting up ahead. They have a fleet of helicopters. They usually fly one at a time. But it's pretty new. They started it last year. But its camera is so powerful that it can tell if the kids' shoelaces are untied. It can see the scoreboard on the high school football game. So they use it from up above to track where the stolen car is going. So even if they can't chase it on the ground, they'll know where it ends up or where it's going. And if a kid bails, as they often do, for a foot chase, it can track the kid hiding in a truck bed or, you know which house they ran into. Pretty high tech.
Is that from the high-powered lens on the helicopter, is that what's called Star Chase?
No, so Star Chase is a little bit of a different thing, but also a little, I guess, James Bondy. it is something that St. Pete Police had, and they've since eliminated because it sort of didn't work. The kids got wise to it. But it was a little pneumatic tracker. It shot out of the front of 10 police cars in St. Pete that were equipped with it. So it was basically a Coke can covered in super glue. And it would theoretically stick to the car and become a GPS tracker that the officer could follow from inside of their cruiser in lieu of chasing. The issue with that is it didn't always stick. And if it did stick, sometimes the kids would know it, pull over, take it, toss it on a rooftop, and then keep going on their way.
Yeah, I've never had that much luck with super glue moving that quickly. It's usually my finger that's stuck to whatever it is. So
yep.
Before we go, I wanted to ask you, what are some tips that you would have for people living in Pinellas County that don't want their car to get stolen?
Lock your car. These kids are not extending more effort than they need to. If your car is locked, they will go to the next car, park next to you, or look somewhere else. If you lock your car, the odds of getting your car stolen go drastically down.
And don't leave it running. at a gas station or a convenience store, or to pick up your daughter or son from the babysitter. Anywhere, there's obviously a presumption that you're going to be safe, that this is yours, it's not going to get taken. But if you make it easy and you're in the wrong place at the wrong time, that car is going to get stolen.
And that might also be a good tip, that when you stop to get gas, you turn off your car. When they have the ones that don't have a key ignition, they have that remote. Mm-hmm. Take that remote little key fob thing with you when you go just put the gas in. Even because, like you said, that one guy, he was just walked around his car to look at an allegedly flat tire.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, with push start cars, it's really easy. You never put the key in and crank it, right? So it's easy to just kind of lose track of that fob. But that thing starts your car, so always know where it's going to be.
Reporting the story has totally changed how I think about this. You know, if I'm cleaning out my car and just walking 5 feet away to put a bag of trash in the dumpster, I will still close every door, lock my car, put the alarm on, even if I'm like 3 feet away from the car.
I know. Next time I get gas, I'm finding that key fob and taking it with me. Well, we're going to have to leave it there for now, but I want to thank our guests, Lisa Gartner and Zachary Sampson, reporters of the Tampa Bay Times. Thanks for your report, and thanks for joining us to help explain it out.
Thanks so much for having us.
We have links to the two-part investigation titled Hot Wheels and the Chase on our website, wgcunews.org. Click on the tab for Gulf Coast Live. Coming up, clean tap water may not be what's on tap for many in the U.S., according to a new report from the Natural Resources Defense Council. We'll have a look at the numbers, see how Southwest Florida stacks up, and talk to one of the authors of the report about what infrastructure needs this study uncovers. I'm Julie Glenn. This is Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.